Stand Outside This Woman's Work, written by Anime Diak and read by Sunkitten Shash. A Dark Rise fic, rated teen. Summary. Catherine Kent is a pelt that Vasander is wearing. When Vasander strips off the fine silk dress he is wearing, he can count the ribs. In the middle of a lower deck room on a naval ship, 50 nautical miles from the coast of England, he stares down at the naked body he is haunting. The bare expanse of unblemished teenage skin, the blonde curls between the legs, the toes curling in the cold. The cabin is near barren, but he looks up into a warped silver mirror on the wall when he turns away from the body. Vasander startles at the sight of a stranger, and in the moment before recognition seeps in, Catherine Kent stares back at him, face unreadable. "Stop frowning." Vasander turns to where the little one is walking back into the room, her arms shaking with the weight of a wash basin full with seawater. Her voice is stern, serious in the way many little girls are. Her gaze gleams, accusatory, in the lamplight. "It'll give you wrinkles." Elizabeth watches him attempt to school the face into something smoother, the body still naked between them, and yet still looks put out. She is more concerned with the presentation of the body than Vasander is, at all times fussing over the hair, the manners, the dresses that Vasander is forced to bear. Even when she has seen this body kill, she is insistent that it is perceived as a perfect young lady. When it was last covered in blood, Elizabeth stole a handkerchief from a man to wipe the face with. She is a stubborn thing, a magical thing, and she treats him with care. Vasander loves her because she is blood of the lady, which is not the way Elizabeth wants to be loved, which is like a sister. "You should smile. You look prettier smiling," Elizabeth states bluntly, dripping a cloth over the edge of the basin. She says this because she knows it to be a fact, but Vasander is not the one she knows it from. She still sees her sister when she looks at this body. "I will try," Vasander tells her, the voice sweet and tightly pronounced, and Elizabeth nods satisfactorily. Vasander does not smile, but he loosens the jaw. They are a day and a half sailing from England, where the Dark King has run to, and Vasander is expected to be at dinner this evening. Much of the men still believe Catherine Kent to be a mad thing, and Elizabeth still believes her sister to be returning someday, and Vasander is unsure of what he believes, beyond that Catherine Kent is a pelt that he is wearing. The humans serve an abomination for supper, a small bird stuffed inside a chicken, with an egg at the center. In the dining room of the captain's quarters, below the ship's deck, the lamplight makes the grease of it glisten. Barely anyone looks at Catherine Kent at meals anymore, either uncaring of a 16-year-old gentlewoman, or unwilling to make eye contact with the girl in the silk evening dress who has a silver longsword leant against the side of the table beside her. Elizabeth is one of only two who watches Vasander, eyes like a hawk on the way he fumbles with the correct cutlery. An eyebrow raised when he hovers the hand over the wrong fork, and a happy nod when he grips the paring knife with its serrated edge. In the flat polish of the blade, Catherine's eyes reflect back at Vasander, bright blue in a delicate face. In turning away from the reflection, he faces the food, the belly of the chicken swollen like a woman with child. Vasander swallows down the bile that rises in his throat, and grips the silver knife with a delicately boned hand. It is easy to forget about the body he inhabits when he is fighting, when he is killing, when he has a sword in her hand, like he did when he was a man and a soldier. Visander dismembers the meat on his plate, splitting the softer bird from the one housing it. The oil spills out into the cream surrounding it on the plate. Visander chews, taking the smallest bites possible. He can feel his husband's eyes on her across the table the entire meal. Visander does not look. He cuts. It bites. She chews. In his dreams, Visander's lady kills him with a promise to fight for her dying on his lips. Tonight, she spears him through the chest and then butchers him like an animal, his flesh gleaming with fat and viscera. His lady's eyes shine with pride when she pries a chunk from Visander's chest and feeds it to Catherine Kent. The girl is glassy-eyed and delicate and blonde, and Visander's blood smears over her face while she is force-fed his innards. His lady shovels flesh into the girl until she chokes and goes pale in the way of the White Death, and then his lady stands over the both of them. The dream reforges itself. His lady skins the girl and has Visander wear her skin, her hair, pries out his eyes to replace them with hers. She grabs him by the scruff of his neck and shows him his girlish reflection and the polished blade of his sword. In the dream, Catherine Kent is missing a perfectly circular part of her skull. There is no blood on the stones. There is no care given to the remnants of his body. The entire time he is asking her, "Are you pleased with me?" And his lady says, "Yes, Visander. Yes, you will be the one to return me." He welcomes everything she does to him. The girl lies dead on the stones. The girl is Visander, and her death is his, too. In the dream, like in waking, Visander claws his way out of her grave. In the dream, like in waking, he cannot claw his way out of her body. Visander wakes, feeling as though something is caught in his throat. The little one is sleeping, and does not wake when Visander shoves the blankets off of the body, when he grabs his sword with her hands, when he frees himself from the constricting darkness of the ship cabins, and drags the body up the stairs to the upper deck of the swaying, creaking excuse of a ship. The vessels Visander has had the displeasure of boarding in this new world are all ugly things, propelling themselves through choppy waves with brute force. They make him sick, make the stomach roil. The lamps on the deck make the shiny fabric of his sleeping gown gleam, and the blonde ringlets of hair in his peripherals are fixed in place with curlers. Ecthelion is a weight in the hand. The mouth tastes of blood, even if only as a memory of a life a millennia ago. It is his duty. He knows it. Visander is a soldier, and his lady's most dedicated. He died to return on her behalf. He fought at her side and her blood's side, and at the side of the blood of her enemy, for the single purpose of killing the Dark King. Visander is proud of it. His tasking, his commitment, the fact that this has not been a problem in the 2 months that he has been inhabiting Catherine Kent's body. Visander has been beautiful, and is beautiful now. The shape of it is all that has changed. But Visander steadies himself against the railing of the ship, and the curlers in the hair are like horse blinkers in that he can only stare straight ahead into the dark ocean, gleaming like oil under the lamps on the bow. His vision, already narrowed, tunnels. Her hand pulls at the silk scraps that Elizabeth had twisted into the damp curls, and Visander, for every person he has killed, Every court coup he has dismantled, every task given to him he has succeeded in, cannot pry them out. The hands scrabble uselessly at the silk ties, and Fassandra's vision swims, enough that she slumps to the ground against the taffrail. Ecthalion's sharp edge is a taunting presence in the lap, and Fassandra wraps her hand around the hilt and brings the blade upwards towards the hair in a clean arc. What are you doing? Catherine Kent's limbs jump with adrenaline, teetering on the edge between fight and flight for a few seconds, before her ghost fades from the body, back to whatever slumber was just disturbed. Vassander blinks, and the hand drops Ecthalion, the blade chiming when it hits the empty deck beside him. The boat groans as it fights another wave. Philip is half-dressed, arms crossed against the sea air, and steps quickly across the deck towards Vassander. His eyes gleam, baffled, incredulous. His shirt sleeves are unbuttoned. I was going to cut it off, Fassandra tells him, her voice sounding absent even to him. Ecthalion is gleaming coldly in the lamplight. It had split his sleeping gown at the thigh when he dropped it, missing her flesh by a mere inch. Not that it would matter. This body bleeds of its own accord without injury. The first time the woman's bleeding had happened, Fassandra thought he was dying again. In the lamp-lit dimness of the ship's upper deck, the red of Philip's waistcoat is the color of old wine, menstrual blood, roses, the year that Fassandra's lady had the gardener use horse manure on the floor beds. The petals grew so dark they almost looked purple. Philip is a tall, sleek figure over Catherine Kent's crouched form, the leather of his boots gleaming at eye level, and Fassandra looks steadfastly at the laces rather than at his face. With that? Fassandra does not have to explain himself to a man who has always been a man. He does not have to explain himself to a man with the blood of the Dark King, even if Fassandra is married to him. There's irony somewhere in that, Fassandra is sure, but he was never one for jokes, and he still fails to understand them. Philip says nothing of the silence, still standing before Fassandra and the cold sea wind on the deck. If you want to, I'm sure we can find something more appropriate than that. I don't, Fassandra tells the man. A moment of weakness, that is all. Philip is quiet amidst the churning groan of the ocean over the side of the bore, and quiet scraping as Ecthalion moves against the wood of the deck. Well, Philip says, the offer stands. Vassander nods. The ship rocks. Philip Green shuffles on his feet, and then bends to sit silently beside Vassander on the ship's deck. It would be a surprise if Fassandra had not seen him watching all evening. Had not watched Philip Crean digging away at the collapsed entrance to the palace after Will Kempen had let loose the dark, only to reach for Fassandra and Elizabeth the second he saw them. Had not commanded Philip Crean 2 days ago to show him how to load a gun. It would be a surprise if Philip Crean had not convinced his family's men that Catherine Kent had simply taken a funny turn, and that it was better for her health if she returned to London alongside her new attendants, the Ballard girl, and a boy with a sword not unlike Ecthalion. Like this, though, side by side, Vassander cannot see him past the blinker-like curlers fixed to the side of his head. His peripherals are a mass of blonde and silk, and then darkness. The oil lamp dinginess of the upper deck. When Fassandra woke, it was in a coffin, arms pinned by the sides and unable to see anything either side of him. Visandra tries once more to dislodge a curler, and ends with fingers tangled in it. He yanks, feels himself let out a girlish huff of frustration, and yanks again. It reminds him of the first time he could not get out of the corset on his own. He had sliced through the stays with a knife, rather than wait for Elizabeth to help. Visandra feels mortifyingly close to throwing up. "You'll pull something out like that," Philip chides, and Visandra cannot see him, but he can hear the sternness in his tone over the chop of the waves. "Stop! Stop! I'll do it, lest you go completely bald." "I don't care." "Well, I do," Philip says, knocking the other hand out of the way, and reaching up to carefully unwrap her hair from around the scrap of silk closest to himself. He talks as he does it, and Visandra pulls the legs up to the chest, and wraps her arms around her knees. "Soldiers, the lot of you. No care for your appearance. It won't be for a while before that is even remotely in fashion, unless you are considering a wig. Did Elizabeth do these?" The 10-year-old had sat Visandra down after the dinner and fixed the hair, with the explanation that Visandra needed to look nice in order for them to easily navigate the annals of London to get to the Dark King. She had made a wistful comment about the golden ringlets, comparing the body to her self-proclaimed plainness. Visandra could not see what she spoke of. "Elizabeth has the round cheeks of his lady, the shell-like ears, the long, soft hair. She's smart, stubborn and stern and sharp-eyed. She distrusts first, and then asks questions. She may not be exact, but Elizabeth is obviously the blood of his lady. Visandra knows her in life and in death, and in this borrowed existence after death. Anybody that shares her lineage is beautiful." "Yes," Visandra says, as Philip shakes the loosened ringlet out. Like this, he can see the other man at the edge of his vision, cross-legged in his fine clothes on the deck of a ship. The sea spray hits their backs through the railing. "Before bed." "Good girl," Philip says, almost approvingly. "Good tension." "They're too tight." "All right, then." Philip silently tucks the scrap of silk in the breast pocket of his waistcoat, and starts to dismantle the rest of the curlers with a single-minded focus on destroying them. Maybe this is what he takes from his bloodline, Visandra thinks, beyond the hair and the vanity. The dedication to a task, the taking apart of something, the deft motion of the fingers. Visandra drops his gaze to the uncalloused palms as Philip pries the curlers out carefully. The soft pads below the joint of the fingers are torn, where this body was not prepared for the rough handle of a weapon. Visandra grew up with a sword in his hand. The make of this body keeps trumping his own memory of a sharp edge. Philip's hands are deft and gentle, not kind when it comes to the curlers at the base of the neck, but efficient. Visandra turns the head so that he can reach the last ones, the hair pulling at the soft skin at the nape, and then Philip is presenting Visandra with a handful of silk scraps. Visandra wrinkles her nose.
"Forbear, man."
"I don't understand what you just said," Philip says, tucking them into the unbuttoned pocket of his waistcoat, "but I do not imagine it was anything gleeful." After a moment, when Visandra must show no signs of moving, Philip brings his hand back up toward the hair, like he's angling to pet a wild animal. Visandra does not bite regardless, and this body of his has divested him of many of his physical defenses, but below it all, the touch is kind. Philip curls his fingers back into the hair, and works his way studiously through the ringlets, only occasionally throwing a hesitant glance to the sword between them. Ecthelion's blade gleams pure and silver on the deck, and Visenda runs a finger over the edge of it, and Philip keeps combing through her hair. Philip does not ask him the question any sane person would ask of the situation, the why behind Visenda holding a sword to his host's scalp. He does ask Visenda this, though, untangling the last curls with his fingers soft against the scalp. How would you have it?
What?
Your hair. How would you rather have it?
It is not mine, Visenda says, clipped in the high-pitched voice he will affect until this body dies. This is not my body.
It is now.
It does not feel like mine.
The words bite, crack on the deck, like something Visenda is disgusted by, which he is. Philip does not leave, or even take his hands out of the hair. He continues to stroke through the soft curls, and squints at Visenda calculatingly.
Let's see if we can do something about that, then, Philip tells him eventually, wrapping a ringlet around his finger, as Visenda stares sidelong at the golden tresses.
What would make it feel like yours? The only things Visenda recognizes of the body he is in are the parts that are his lady's. This body has his lady's face, her eyes, the long golden lashes that used to disappear in the sun, the blank look that she had on that final day when she speared him through his chest. Catherine Kent's hair curls naturally in a way Visenda's never did. The only point of similarity is its color. Visenda has nothing familiar in this body, but it is all he has. He thinks he can maybe make it livable with help. Just not in my eyes. When Visenda looks in a mirror, or a pail of water, or the sea, or in the gleam of a blade or someone's eyes, the face is always half-concealed by the mass of curls clinging to the curve of the cheeks. He almost took a blade through the throat from a remnant those first days of waking, because the loose hair she had been buried with kept blocking his vision. Visenda had thought of cutting it all off then, too. He is still thinking about it now. Sinking a blade into the one part of this body that it won't kill. Philip Crean is not privy to these thoughts, but he seems satisfied with what he has been told. Visenda watches hesitantly as Philip tugs back out some of the silk scraps that Elizabeth had used as curlers, and under his hands, Visenda waits, staring at the thin knees of this body. Philip's touch is steady and sure as he gathers up the curls and ties them away, and then spends more time than seems necessary fiddling with a few of the strands. Visenda shuts his eyes briefly into the touch. Miles away, there's the quiet memory of the same bloodline running a hand through his hair and laughing. You're so sweet like this, Sandy. Somewhere at the bow of the ship, a man calls something unintelligible. Somewhere in the belly of the boat, there is the last remaining creature of Visander's era. Here, on the deck, Visenda is alive, and married, and still hungry for blood. There, Philip says, evenly. They've shifted in a way that Catherine's body is pressed against the line of Philip's chest, and Visenda has to look upwards to see the sharp line of his jaw in the lamplight. How was that? Whatever he has done to her hair is loose around the temples in a way that it does not pull when Visenda turns the head, and twisted back at the crown enough that it does not impede Visenda's peripheral vision like the gathered curls had. It would be neater if we had more light, Philip is saying, and pins. But I think this will do for now. We can try again tomorrow.
You would do this again. I will, and I would. Even though I am not her in any body, Philip interrupts. His voice is steady. It is an unimaginably earnest sentiment for someone who is blood of the king. It strikes Fassander that Catherine Kent may have been Simon Crean's bride, but Philip has only known Fassander. Fassander looks down. Philip's mouth is unwatchable. Fassander's mind is trapped inside of this body that is 16, that is built like a glass house, that is married to not quite a king, that cannot stomach too much cream. The teeth are too blunt. The ribs ache. Fassander is a soldier dressed like a child's princess doll. He frowns. No man. Fassander, Philip tells him evenly, and Fassander looks up at the call of his name. I am not most men. No, you are blood of the king. Will you let that go for a moment? Philip chides quietly, shifting behind Fassander. He sounds a little like he might laugh, but he just brushes his hand over the bared shoulder before pulling it away to pull lightly at a loose ringlet spilling from the side of the hairdo. You're supposed to say thank you. Thank you. Good. Now, Philip says, you may not think this is your body, but you are still in it, and I will not have you getting sick from sitting out here all night. Your sister would have my head. Fassander catches his reflection in the gleam of Ecthalion when he picks it up, the wide eyes of Catherine Kent still reflecting back at him. The hair is pulled back from the forehead now, though, unfussy and neat. It reveals the purpling bruise at the temple from the rock Fassander was thrown into. The edges of the wound are scabbing. When Philip stands, he extends a hand to Fassander. Gentlemanly, even in his rumpled pants and unbuttoned pockets. The sea air has thrown his hair into disarray. A rare occurrence for a man so vain. What? Philip asks, when Fassander is still staring at him, even after he's pulled him up from the deck with ease. Their hands are still joined, and Fassander, feeling awed and feeling bold, links the bone china fingers marred with his sword calluses through Philip's. I want pants, Fassander says, and Philip nods solemnly, and above them, silently, the jib sails yawn wide in the night wind, like the breath leaving a corpse. The end. Thanks for listening.